it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Here's some tips for maintaining your Trex deck. Occasionally wash it with some soapy water or a pressure cleaner. Trex composite decking is low maintenance and won't fade, splinter or warp. Trex, the world's number one decking brand.
Yablet! Four goals to Yablet.
Oh, Jasperenko, you're guilty!
Justin Madden's got the sit, one hand.
Rises to the top. He is an absolute legend of the game.
This is your Football Life with Rex Hunt for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Matthew, and that's exactly what we're doing today. And welcome Australia, and in fact the world, by the World Wide Web. What technology this has been. We're getting response from the Northern Hemisphere like you wouldn't believe, of Australians and non-Australians who stumble across This Is Your Footy Life and are just amazed at what stories we're telling. Well, they're not stories. They're great, energetic excerpts from people's lives who have become household names. And today we have a one in a few men who are going to stand out. I used to call him Little Big Man on 3RW, and that was just as a tribute to Dustin Hoffman in that wonderful motion picture. But in the VFL and AFL, thousands of men have played the game at this, the highest level. Some play and move on, others make more of an impact. They make a lasting impression, such is the case with today's guest. Now listen to this very carefully. 283 games at the highest level for Footscray - the Western Bulldogs from 1986 to 2002. The 1990 Brownlow medalist, Footscray team of the century, only player to have won a league best and fairest in all three levels, under-19s, reserves, and at the top level. He is, of course, Libber, and that's what we're affectionately known as, and he's Tony Liberatore. He's joined us today. Libber, how are you going?
Hi, Rex. How are you?
Well, terrific, and you must feel really, really warm and proud when I read out that record. It's something that you and your family can be very, very proud of.
Oh, certainly, Rex. You know, it's probably you don't appreciate all the great things you did in football until you retire, and it's gratifying to be acknowledged, that's for sure.
So many people talk about premierships and the great camaraderie of premiership. You know, Jack Dyer described many of us at Richmond in the 60s and 70s as good ordinary players. They put us with the stars, but every year we get together and talk about those premiership days. Is there just a hollow part of you that just sort of says, what if? Or do you reckon Footscray did the very, very best with what they had?
Oh, certainly, Rex. I mean, that's obviously what you play football for. I mean, it's not that, you know, you go and won individual awards. It's all about team and winning premierships, and you were lucky enough to do that yourself. So
yep,
that's certainly something that I would have liked in my lifetime, but unfortunately, I didn't get to that stage. Played reserves and under-19s, and that's probably about it. But, you know, we got close a few times, but unfortunately, maybe Lady Luck wasn't on our side. But, that's the way it goes, and you move on. But certainly to play in a premiership is what every VFL AFL player's dream would be.
Well, you went through it all at Footscray and the Western Bulldogs, you know, from being the bottom dwellers to really challenging in those preliminary finals. We'll go back to 1966 in February when you were born here in Australia. Tell us about Mum and Dad and their immigration out from Italy.
Yeah, well, I guess Dad came out first, and back in those days he was sent to a place called Bonegilla, which is not far from Shepparton, and a lot of the Italian migrants went out there, and he spent his time there before he actually was looking for work. And Dad was just basically a labourer, and he worked various jobs in tyre factories. The longest job he probably held was at Ford Motor Factory, where he worked on the assembly line. And from then, Mum came out probably prior to that, but they came out on a boat back then. That's how the migrants came out, especially from Italy, and they set up a life that they would start, you know, from obviously renting a house to owning a house, and they were based most of their lives, working life, they lived in Brunswick, and where Mum still resides, and she's 85, and I still take her to the football now. So she loves her football, but certainly they had a very tough life, but no doubt Dad was a very a very humble man. You know, he passed away probably about over 18 months ago, but
yes.
That's probably the word I could probably describe. He didn't really, he was very happy just to be, he was quite grateful actually from the Australian government just to give an opportunity to work and build a house and
yeah.
Eventually have a holiday house. And he loved life, and he certainly, when my twin brother and I, Freddie, started playing football under nines at Brunswick City in the Essendon District Football League, they came out and supported us. And I had an older brother, still have got an older brother, older sister,
yeah,
who played in different sports. And we just sort of progressed from there. They were massive influence in my life, and certainly Mum and Dad. And luckily enough, Mum's still alive and doing really well at 85. And
wonderful.
I take her to the football as much as I can, and she's really enjoying the watching Tom, her grandson, play footy.
We'll get to Tom in a few moments' time, but this is Libba, folks. You probably recognise the voice, Tony Liberatore, the little big man with the big chest and the heart that just was pumping out there when I was broadcasting on 3RW. So the under-9s, you got straight into Australian football, or did you try soccer? Just tell us about those early years before you got invited to go to Arden Street, North Melbourne.
Yeah, look, I guess all the kids at school played footy. I went to St. Joseph's, West Brunswick, and they said there was a club starting up down the road, down the hill, bottom of the hill, Peacock Reserve, called Brunswick City. And I thought to myself, okay, well, yeah, you just play with friends, and football was the big thing back then. And then I was actually a Richmond supporter growing up because my cousins broke for Richmond, and we went to a few games. We didn't get the opportunity to see many the odd MCG game, but we certainly watched Brunswick play in the VFA because I didn't live too far from the ground, just probably a K from the ground. But yeah, played there. Twin brother Fred and I played, and we played from under nines up until probably about under 15s. And back in those days, there was zoning, and we were zoned to North Melbourne. And I was invited to play when I was 16, 17, probably 17. With the North Melbourne Under-19s, coached by Dennis Pagan. And
wow.
A few of the Brunswick kids we all sort of went down to training there a few times a week. And then we really understood what football was about under Dennis. And he's probably, throughout my football career, probably one of the greatest influences for me. Because he was someone who this is the way, if you want to play AFL football, this is what you have to do.
Yeah,
and we'd get the phone calls on a Friday night to make sure you're ready to go playing under 19s, because back in those days when we played under 19s, we actually played on the opposite ground of the seniors. So if North Melbourne was playing, say, Richmond at the MCG, we would play at Arden Street at the same time but opposite times. And from then, I guess I think Dennis liked the way I played the game. I was probably wasn't over in there with a lot of skill, but certainly I persisted, and I had to work hard at my footy. And from there, I probably, my first year there, I think it was 83, and we played in a grand final but lost, and I was on the bench when I was 17. And we played Melbourne, we lost that game, and then from there, 84, we were lucky enough to win the grand final, and
yeah.
I did win the Morris Medal.
And the Morris Medal. And those are the days, Tony Liberatore, too, that there were three grand finals on the one day in that last Saturday in September, wasn't it? That you'd start about 9 o'clock in the morning kicking the frost off the ground.
Yes. I can remember Jack Edwards calling my name and times, and some of those great old commentators who, it's amazing, you look back on it now and it's fantastic. And
yeah,
then I had the opportunity to play some reserve grade football, so I think I played a few games in the reserves in 84 and 85, and 85 was my last year, and we were runners up in 85. And from then I sort of thought you'd progress to play reserve grade football, get on the senior list, but unfortunately, that wasn't the case, and I was left in limbo a bit because I'd played, I probably played about 12, 20 reserve games and a lot of under-19 games. Didn't miss a lot of football, and I was told that, you know, I didn't make the cut. So I thought to myself, well, this was a real dream of mine, and I said to Dennis, who was still coaching the under-19s, oh, what do I do now? He said, well, look, son, the best thing to do is probably play at the best next level, which was the VFL, and I was pretty heartbroken, to be quite honest, because I had my heart and sights set on playing AFL football, or VFL football back then. So from there, I had a training run in Port Melbourne, and they invited me down, and I was it was pre-season. I was that far ahead of them. I thought to myself, I'm lapping these guys in the time trials and the sprints and what have you. And I thought to myself, no, there's got to be another way. So I remember I was working for a company called Legal in General as a mail clerk, and opening and closing mail. And there was an insurance agent called Trevor Ashman who I spoke to once, and he said to me, he said, well, why don't you just give him a call? You know, like he sort of encouraged me to, because I got to know a lot of the agents quite well, and give a couple of footy clubs a call, try a few of the clubs, see what you think. So I've just off my own bat, I rang up St Kilda, I think Hawthorn and North Melbourne, because I thought they were the teams that might need some rovers. And back then, I think, I think Graham Jelly was coaching St Kilda, and I spoke to him, and he sort of said, look, we're okay, we've got enough little guys. So, but, you know, I know you've won the Morrish medal, but I think they looked at my height as a bit of a disadvantage. And so Hawthorn, I can't remember who I spoke to there, but they had John Platton coming over. I think that was 86. Or might have been a couple other guys. But then Mick Mulder was coaching North Melbourne, and he said, look, can't promise you anything, but come down and have a training run. So, as you know, back in those days, 85, 86, there was a lot of players trying out, and you'd have up to 70, 80 guys on the track pre-season.
Oh, tell me about it.
Coming down for a training run.
The March champions, Libba.
Well,
and when it got wet and you got a corky, they were nowhere to be seen.
Very
had them too at your club.
we had another very funny man in Simon Beasley, who was a bit of a character at the club. And I'll tell you a story. My first training session, I rocked up to the ground, and I wasn't much taller than I am now. I guess 5'4", but I was one of the smallest men on the ground, and or young fellas on the ground, and I was running around, and we were all doing our stretches in this big circle, about 70 of us, and Simon looked over to me and said, hey, little fella over there, the curly hair, you've got the wrong ground, you should be at Flemington, you're a jockey, aren't you? So
very dangerous to say that, Simon.
I couldn't build a bigger ditch in the ground to try and get under.
Goodness
because
me.
I'm so embarrassed.
What we might do is just take a break and get you from North Melbourne to Footscray. But before we take a break, on behalf of Tobin Brothers, folks, this is Tony Liberatore. You just know him as Libra. He's one of those guys in the game. You talk about Libby, you know he's a little big man with a big heart. Before we go to the break for Tobin celebrating your footy life, Tony, just a couple of off-the-cuff answers. I think I know the answer. You're absolute favourite food of all time.
My mother's lasagna.
And you'd be in trouble if Mum heard anything different. Tony Liberatore, when you get around to it, I'd like to do this for myself.
Oh, look, I'd love to see the Bulldogs win a premiership.
Wow.
With Tom playing there, that would be a great highlight. You know, look, I've been lucky enough to travel a fair bit overseas, but, you know, that's, to me,
it's what it's all about. It's what it's all about. Ask your mum. It's about family. My all-time favourite movie is?
Raging Bull, Robert De Niro.
Wow, that goes back. Black and white, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. Jack Dyer never watched it because it was in black and white, because it was Collingwood. And to my mind, to your mind, Tony Liberatore, the greatest Australian rules footballer of all time is?
Gary Ablett.
Well, there you are. Yablet and Libba, two of my favourites on 3RW. We're going to take a break, folks. You can just feel how much I'm enjoying it, and I know you're enjoying it right around the world for Tobin Brothers celebrating the footy life of Tony Liberatore. And, folks, we'll take a break, our relays, and be back with the real story as Libba heads to the Western Oval.
Dream rises to the top. He is an absolute legend of the game.
You're listening to This Is Your Football Life with Rex Hunt for Tobin Brothers Funerals. Celebrating lives.
And Matty, the common denominator with most of our guests is hard work and loving footy as a kid and mum's cooking. And today, as Tommy Avery would say, the cooking, you know, jumping, running, cooking and other things. Libba is an absolute star of the game. I call him affectionately the little big man because he's an inspiration to a lot of big blokes like me who might just whoosh it with an ingrown toenail. We get to the Western Oval, Libba. It wasn't all smooth sailing. You won the best and fairest in the reserves, but you didn't go to Footscray to play reserves football, but you just found it the four games in the first year. Take us through those first couple of years out at the Western Oval.
Yeah, look, my first year was 1986, and I only played four games with the number 60 on my back. So that was quite interesting. But, yeah, look, I mean, I've just found that the pace of the game was quite fast. I think the Bulldogs had brought Tony McGuinness over, and my sort of chances were a little bit limited. But in saying that, I was lucky enough to win the Gardner Medal, the reserves best in the comp. And from there, 1987 was, for me, was probably a little bit of a breakout year because I played 12 games.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, well, I can really start establish myself. Played a couple of good games, like in the seniors, and I was confident enough to think that I could start, you know, follow the routine. Because back then, I guess we all had to do our apprenticeship in the reserves and from there graduate to playing senior football.
But this is ridiculous. Your apprenticeship, you must have been thinking, because, you know, in 87, you just thought, I'm getting there. But back you go again with a setback, 88, 89. Do you think these setbacks are more important to young people than easily achieved accolades? Do you subscribe to that, Libba?
Yes, yeah, certainly. No doubt. I mean, it builds character and it also builds resilience, because 88, 89, I only played one senior game. And then in 89, further to the only game I played, I was named captain of the reserve. So I thought to myself, I think I'm going down with fire.
I wouldn't think if they had superannuation back there, Libba, that you were sort of thinking I might get some superannuation here.
Yeah, it was up to $20 a game back then, but anyway. look, I had a really great relationship with all the guys I played with, and most guys who play football have long-lasting friendships. And I was contemplating on leaving because I thought to myself, well, there's not much chance of getting – I haven't got much of an opportunity, and there wasn't much – I wasn't one who would front the coach and say, hey, how come I'm not getting a game? I've been playing best on ground in the reserves every week. I didn't think it was my place. I thought it was a respect thing that if they thought I was good enough, they'd pick me. So, look, they looked at me as a quite limited. You know, my opportunities only arise when the ground was 10 foot underwater. So, look, I only got one game then. And then I was going to leave and I was going to go into the internal draft. It might have been the first year, 89 of the draft, 90, and I think it might have been 90 pre-season. And guys like Doug Hawkins, you know, sort of convinced me to stay because I had a lot of respect for Doug. And not only was he a champion football, but geez, he was a champion man as a friend and as a mentor. So 1990, I thought, I am to know, will I stay, will I go? And I thought to myself, look, I'll stay because I love the guys, love the club, really good friendship amongst these guys. And what if it's to be, it's to be. And a lot of upheaval happened 89 because the merger was going to take place.
Oh, yeah.
With
Fitzroy, that was big out there, wasn't it? With a huge crowd turning up out there with the lady, I forget the name, the lady
Chatfield.
That was emotional. And that was like Don Scott standing up with the Hawthorn Guernsey. It was emotional stuff, wasn't it? And up yours, Oakley, and then all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Undoubtedly, and you know, the people from the West wanted a football club, and you know, the great thing was that the club survived. I think they raised $1 million they had to raise back then, and Peter Gordon got involved, and as a local solicitor, I think, and Terry Wheeler, who was the reserves coach, was appointed senior coach. And I remember the pre-season saying to him, Terry, what are my chances? He said, look, I can't guarantee of a game here or there, but I'll give you some opportunity, you know, because he coached me in 89, I think. He was a Williamstown coach. And anyway, no, he coached me in 89, and I thought to myself, look, I'll stay. And I played the last practice match, and back then it was we used to play at local football grounds. We played Collingwood at the Basin. Remember that clearly, and I played really well, and I thought, oh, I'll bet you round one I'll get dropped, like every other time. But round one, to his word. He picked me, and I kicked the goal in my first game. I had about 15 possessions, and I thought, oh, we got done by about 10 goals, you know, considering the club was going to merge. I think St Kilda beat us that first game. But then the second game we played Sydney in Sydney. We'd never, ever beaten Sydney in Sydney, I think, as a real history at the club. And
not many people had.
No. And I kicked three goals and had a really breakout game. And I thought I really built up a lot of confidence back then. And Wheels was an extremely passionate man and very loved the football club. And, you know, he'd sit us around campfires with guys like Alan Hopkins and Georgie Bissett and Bones McGee and talk about the history of the football club. It was very, very important to him that the players understood about the history. And I learned a lot under Wheeler. And the guy who probably helped me a lot was Georgie Bissett. He was my mentor. He helped all the midfielders, and he'd have me outside on the ground trying to get me to do drop kicks in a game.
Yeah.
I remember he said, "Have a go at a drop kick. It's going to go straight, I guarantee you." And I don't think I did, back then it was only not even Wheels was trying to bring in a bit of a semi-professional thing for footy. And lo and behold, the 90 season had a really good year. We just missed, I think we finished about eighth or ninth on the ladder and didn't make finals, but it was a saber year for us. And I was lucky enough to win the Brownlow. So.
Lucky enough. Now, just stop that, young man. You just leave the bulldust to me, mate, because I am the absolute, Sam Newman says I'm the prince of bullshit because, he says bulldust anyhow, but I'm the one that, mate, this is an amazing story. Of playing in 1988 and 1990, two games, one game in each, and you come out in 1990 and win the Brownlow Medal. If that ain't the greatest story of persistence in the game, I'm not bald, mate. Just fantastic. Now, before you go on, we have to sort of just say, you know, the opposition hated you, but you were a prolific tackler. The people at Western Oval couldn't get enough of you on the Doug Hawkins wing. They talk about the skill of tackling now, but 25 years ago, you'd already worked out that it is a skill and you practiced it.
Yeah, look, I guess I did. For me, it was more like, well, if I haven't got the ball, I'm going to try and get the ball off the opposition. So that, to me, it was just, it sort of just came naturally to me. As I said, I wasn't tall, but I certainly wasn't someone who was scared to have a, you know, crack into players and tackle and pressure and chase and harass. And, you know, I hadn't played any tagging role back then, so it was completely different. The game, well, I guess the game's a bit like now. There's not a lot of that going on. But
no.
For me, it was just something that I had to be good at because, you know, it wasn't a long kick. I wasn't an accurate kick, but I was pretty good with my hands. And I built up a lot of confidence through tackling, and I was fairly solid. Stocky sort of play.
You actually, Tony Liberatore, thrived on that physical sort of combatants of the game. Looking at young Tom, and I'm running out of time, I've got so many things there, but I want to get to Tom because he's a son of a gun. He's got a lot of your characters, particularly going hard at the ball. And was that always evidence in his childhood?
Look, yeah, it probably was playing football at his local footy club at St Bernard's, but I think I'm a great believer in genetics, and I think that he might have had a gene from me to sort of say, this is the way I play the game. And he might have looked at me from afar and said, you know, when I was towards the end of my career and sort of said, well, that's the way you play the game.
Yeah.
You've got to go and chase the opposition and hunt them down and tackle and put pressure on. So, yeah, so look.
And he's had a bit of a turnaround in his career as well, and you must think deja vu, and you and your mum sit up and watch him with your family. He's learned about persistence too and never giving up, Tony.
Yeah, exactly. And look, and also that 1990 season, I missed the last three, four games with the knee. I did my knee, had a reconstruction, and lo and behold, Tom had a reconstruction last year.
Goodness
so
me, your heart must have been in your game. Throat when he went down. He's just a fantastic chip off the old block. The Matthew Knights game at the MCG I was broadcasting was more blood there than at the blood bank. You got the boos, you got the cheers, that sort of thing. But you certainly made your peace. But back then, what went on the field stayed on the field. It's not so today, but it was just the way things were, Libba.
Yeah, look, I guess they were. Look, I had to change my game probably in the 96, 97 season because, you know, players were getting off me and getting a lot of the ball themselves. So Terry Wallace, who was our coach, said, look, I want you to become a more negating type player, tagging type player. And I thrived on it because I sort of, it was a bit of a survival thing for me, because if I didn't beat my direct opponent, I literally took it like that, that if I don't beat my direct opponent every week, well, I won't get a game, and I'll finish up my footy career. So, yeah, it's probably not something that sits proud with me. I mean, it was just before the start of the game, I think Matty was a bit fired up, which I think he knew I was going to tag him, but he started on a wing and he was sort of getting into one of our players, Matthew Robbins. I was like, geez, he's a bit fired up today. I wonder what's... He's probably pretty keen. And
you better sort him out.
Unfortunately, he made a beeline towards me, and for some reason I thought he was going to try and bowl me over, but as Charlie Sutton always used to say to me, we got to shop early. So I got one in early, unfortunately, for him. And, all hell broke loose after
but
that.
But you can have a laugh about it now, and you've made your peace on it. Now, before we go, the 97 preliminary final was amazing. Terry Wallace got you people out at the Western Oval. The Western Bulldog spirit just came alive, and never giving up the underdogs. The point that was given... You still reckon it might have just snuck in?
Yeah, look, Brad Johnson swears blue and black that it was a goal, but that was an incredible year, 97, because 96 we finished near the bottom, second last, like Fitzroy were last, but we just came from nowhere, and even on that day, the prelim, we were very known as a very hard side, very physical type side. Sides didn't like playing us, but we had three or four guys out suspended. I think Danny Southern, Paul DiMartino, and one or two others, but yeah, 2 points, to miss out on a... playing off in a grand final was an absolute tragedy, but unfortunately then the breaks, as they say, and we did our best that year, and unfortunately we couldn't really recapture it from 98, 99 onwards.
Well, there you are. We could go on for another hour, mate, but you've got things to do. I've got fish to go and catch. Your boys got to prepare for the game coming up this weekend, and how proud you and your family must be to see young Tom just following in your footsteps. And Libba, you are a star, and we thank you for your time today.
Good on you, Rex. Much appreciated, mate.
Folks, if you'd like to hear the extended version of this interview, check out facebook.com, Tobin Brothers Funerals, or follow us on Twitter at RexFootyLife. We're on air for Tobin Brothers, and they're a great performer because they've got presence on stage, and even after the curtains fall, they leave a lasting impression. These qualities make Tobin Brothers stand out from the rest. Tobin Brothers Funerals is a perfect example after more than 80 years continuing to shine. They genuinely care for families, providing professional guidance and expertise, and these distinguishing qualities make Tobin Brothers Funerals the true performers they are. Find out more at tobinbrothers.com.au. And this has been This Is Your Footy Life with the little big man, Libba, Tony Liberatore. Thanks to Tobin Brothers, celebrating lives.
G'day, Mike Hussey here. Get on board Australia's best fantasy cricket game, KFC Supercoach BBL. It's fun, free and easy to play. Play today at supercoach.com.au.
T's and C's apply. New South Wales authorisation number TP/01005.